Welcome to the Wilderness Medic Podcast. Check out our website at www.thewildernessmedic.com.
Expedition resources, Wilderness Medicine blog, and much more.
And welcome to this new episode of the Wilderness Medic Podcast. I've been away for a little bit, so apologies about that. But today I'm really excited to be joined by Dr. Christy Heather, got it right this time, who is an environmental psychologist, conservationist, and lecturer with the School of Hospitality and Tourism Management at the University of Surrey. And we're going to sort of take a sidestep away from some of the wilderness medicine themes, but it's really important for us as medical professionals, people who are going into the outdoors, to have an appreciation of sort of how our psychology is linked with the environment. And obviously it's a very important time as well for the environment. So thanks so much for joining us today, Christy. How's it all going?
Yeah, great. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much.
Yeah, and we first met online, I think it was at the RGS Explore, when you were giving a talk on some of the things you've been up to and your interest in polar tourism. I suppose it would be interesting just to hear a bit about the background and what led you to sort of get involved with this area.
Yeah, sure. So my environmental interest was first ignited when I travelled to Antarctica with Students on Ice, and they are an organisation offering high school and university scholarships for their educational experiences. So I was 21 at the time, and I guess that experience didn't just change my life, it kind of gave me a purpose for life. And that purpose was, if we protect the poles, we protect our planet. So being in Antarctica taught me to respect nature and want to preserve it. And that kind of fostered my move eventually to go back from my day job in econometrics to study a PhD in environmental psychology and tourism.
Yeah, that's great. And we'll talk a bit more about that trip a bit later on. It'd be really interesting to unpick, I suppose, what exactly in your mind is environmental psychology?
Sure. So it's all about people's thinking and understanding and behavior towards the environment. And this might be the environments that they live in that are really close to home. But what I'm interested in is thinking about how people might react differently, or how environments than they travel, unfamiliar environments, can influence their thinking more broadly about the wider environments and the world itself when they come back home. And can we use travel as a tool to influence people to think differently and behave differently in the long term?
Yeah, I hope we can, because I think it's very relevant at the moment. I think it was just the other day, wasn't it, in the newspapers, these recent articles that it's now 30 degrees warmer in the Arctic, 40 degrees warmer in the Antarctic. And, you know, it's no secret that we're heading towards a bit of a climate disaster. So I suppose if we can get travel to open people's minds, then that would be a good thing.
Yeah, my research fits exactly along that trend. And this trend is sometimes called last chance tourism. And so this is travel that kind of affords the visitors to visit last wilderness areas and observe endangered or threatened species and landscapes. So, you know, the polar regions to see glaciers or to see melting ice, to see polar bears, or equally trekking to Rwanda to see the gorillas, and snorkeling or diving to see the Great Barrier Reef before further bleaching occurs. And so my research really looks at kind of, can this enthusiasm of increasing numbers of tourists contribute, do these tourists contribute to the demise of the ecosystems that they love, that they want to experience, or is there some benefit? And so what my research does, hopefully, is to help people become more than just tourists, for them to become ambassadors. It suggests that by engaging tourists, perhaps in citizen science or self-discovery, such as walking tours or time for self-reflection, people are able to absorb nature through existing pastimes, for example, like photography or music or art. And then people can gain deeper connections with nature when they travel. And this hopefully will lead to them, can contribute to their behaviours. I personally focus on donating behaviours, but hopefully this can inspire other behaviours both kind of daily behaviours and bigger lifestyle decisions to when they return home.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I mean, the term last chance tourism sounds really ominous, doesn't it? I suppose, sort of thinking, actually, you know, it's the last chance before the, you know, the corals get bleached or things get worse. And I suppose it's balancing those opportunities for tourists against, I suppose, the cost to the climate of them potentially getting to these places and the impacts that they may have on some of these destinations. What are your thoughts on some of that? Did that come up in your research at all?
Yeah, exactly. So it is exactly that balance. And that's kind of the question that I looked at in my PhD, was understanding how far people have to travel to have these different mindsets. And so in my PhD, I compared domestic travel and then I compared people's travels internationally. And then also looking at this element of last chance or endangerment, and then to see how far you almost have to go to get a deeper sense of connection with nature and also then trigger new donating habits.
Yeah, and I guess with the findings quite positive, do most tourists sort of, I suppose, have a similar experience to what you're saying and then have that kind of deeper connection and then they move to sort of make a difference? Or because I guess when people watch this, you know, watch loads of lovely environments on the TV, they're kind of quite removed from it and they don't, you experience on a different level when you're actually there, don't you? And do people seem to be moved to actually do something about it a bit more?
Yeah, so what I did, I collaborated with two leading UK adventure tour operators and analysed people's travel patterns and donation histories to assess the role that travelling plays in promoting new donations to charitable organisations. And so some of the key findings that I found were that travel to these last chance destinations prompts the highest instances of new donating to conservation when compared to other nature-based international or domestic trips. The second thing then that I found was that there were key factors that were associated with these new philanthropic donating behaviours. And these were things such as like visiting for the first time or getting really up close to nature.
I suppose once you add in sort of the wildlife you mentioned earlier, sort of obviously seeing polar bears, but I suppose also the pressures that they're under firsthand rather than maybe reading about it, it makes it much more real to people experiencing it, doesn't it? And it'd be really interesting as well to hear a bit more, just I suppose if we rewind a bit more to your trip back when you were 21 and how that, where that was to and then how that was.
Yeah, sure. So as I said, I was 21 at the time, and that was a trip to Antarctica, and I had never really seen snow before. I'm from Poole in Dorset, so I wasn't familiar with mountains or snow, and I won one of these scholarships, which is an absolute surprise. And what that expedition taught me was to see the environment in through new eyes, and how I did that was to work with these people and students and I. So we had a whole ship full of mentors that were enabling us to experience these things. And in that moment, there were scientists on board and we did lots of learning that you would expect, but equally there were artists on board. And this idea of the arts really came through. And I think it's really important that we're always focused on learning about, we must learn more about climate change. We must understand things in order to change. We must know so much. And actually what that trip made me recognize was in order to change or you need to, it's all about feelings. And so that's when the arts really became quite important in this experience. So we had songwriters on board, we had artists on board. And at first I was kind of like, what are they doing there? Surely we should have like another, you know, another scientist telling us something more about the ice and more about the penguins that we were seeing. But actually it was them who enabled us to take this incredible experience and kind of absorb it and to be able to make it make sense to us. And then once you're able to absorb it, then that's when you have the ability to think about change.
That's really interesting, actually. Yeah, because, a lot of the time we think, actually, just send all the scientists, let's get them look at the figures and data and things like that. But I suppose for some people, if your brain works like that, then that's fine. But actually getting that much deeper spiritual connection and through some of the arts and things is really valuable. And is that program still ongoing, the Students for Nice thing, or is it a one-off?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very much still ongoing. They take trips to the Arctic and Antarctic, and it's pretty much a fully scholarship-based program. So if you're a high school student or a university student, check it out.
Definitely. And I'm intrigued by the other project, and then it was in your biography about polar alien hunters. What's that all about?
Yeah, that's probably going to be my coolest job title I ever have. So I am in collaboration with some physical scientists who are working at the University of Cambridge and the British Antarctic Survey and beyond. Also, we've got a polar alien hunter from the Norwegian Institute for Nature. And our aim is to spread a word about the potential risks of polar aliens. And by that, we mean invasive species in Antarctica. So what we've done is we formed a public engagement and biosecurity campaign using comic, which is great. I've become a comic character, which is really exciting. And our aim is to educate both tourists and scientists on the seeds and the little critters that can unintentionally be packed when they get there. And we're working on a grant and a bid right now to develop these tools, develop our comics, but equally look at some new science projects too. I was actually with them at the weekend. We met all in the same place at the same time. So
novel thing to do, actually, isn't it?
and it's really important. Right now, different countries have different regulations in terms of invasive species. And also, you know, tourists follow one thing and perhaps scientists follow another. So this initiative is about bringing absolutely everyone together and everyone following the same protocol.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, because to me, I suppose on face value, it seemed that, you know, these environments, particularly, you know, the Antarctic and the Arctic are quite inhospitable, but there's a real risk of kind of contamination and things also.
Yeah, there is, and more and more so. Within the project, we have we look at both land terrestrial species and also marine species as well that can hitch a ride on the hulls of boats, for example. And we see what they're developing. The polar regions have very fragile ecosystems, and it can take an awful long time, even for the smallest moss to grow. So we really must protect them and ensure they remain as they are.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, particularly as temperature and things change, then I suppose the potential for different things to sort of change within those ecosystems is much more significant as well, isn't it? And I suppose it's really good that obviously you're doing this research and there's a lot of interest into sort of sustainability and looking at sort of ways of kind of encouraging tourism to sort of be more sustainable and to think about things. But do you find that as an industry, you know, there's a small niche of people who are maybe doing this, or do you think it's becoming more widespread now?
I would say I'm optimistic. I think the industry has had time to rethink and reimagine, particularly over COVID. You know, there's the kind of half the industry that are perhaps restarting and desperate to get back to where they were. And hopefully there is more companies and industry now that are reimagining the way they work. So that's my hope, is that we are reimagining the way forward. I think there's still some negative and conflict and perhaps confusing messaging that goes on from the industry and the media, you know, as a whole. And for example, travel offsetting perhaps is an example of that. So, you know, we're told, you know, traveling is great, but then if we offset, and perhaps that can alleviate our guilt. And I think that in my mind certainly hasn't taken off, because it has these mix of emotions in it. We look forward to our travels, our hedonistic activities. They're usually pleasure and what we look forward to most. And then all of a sudden we're told, oh, you can go on travel, but wait, you know, you need to offset because flying's really bad. And I think it's that mix of emotions that actually kind of puts people off. So that's why I focused on donating, as it kind of is a positive to a positive. So if you think of, you know, you're going on a dolphin watching experience, and at the end of it, you're told, oh, and now you can donate if you like to help the habitat of the dolphins and to help protect the dolphins, you're probably likely to do that. If you go on the same dolphin trip and someone says to you, oh, but you flew here, so now you must you know, pay for the sins that you've done in flying here. It just creates a different emotion, and it's exactly the same thing. You're still donating money for the same creatures. But it's just using psychology to think about how we phrase.
That's very interesting, isn't it? Because I think if you can get people sort of when they're in that sort of empathetic state, when they're sort of appreciating their surroundings and the actual problems on the ground, that's going to make more difference as well, isn't it? I think. And yeah. The media, you mentioned the media. What sort of role do you think they're playing? I think it's a mixed bag, isn't it, out there? But overall, do you think they're going in the right direction?
I think increasingly so. I still think there's quite a lot of negative elements that they pick up on. So, for example, you know, over tourism or last chance tourism that I spoke about. And this whole idea that sustainability is something that you need to give up something in order to achieve it. And so that might be things like, you know, reusing your towel, have a shorter shower. All these things are kind of negative elements of the experience. And what I really aim for is to kind of keep messaging positive and active.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it's certainly interesting to get that insight into sort of how you can get that same message across. But yeah, it's all about how you phrase it and things.
Yeah, I can give perhaps an example. So the pig chain restaurants I went to recently, on the back of its menus, it has a map and it shows you that all their ingredients come, I think it was from around 20 miles. And so when I was reading that, I was like, oh, this is exciting. You know, I'm eating seasonally. It's going to be fresh. It's going to be local. And all these things were adding to my experience rather than taking away. And I think that's very different to a menu where you see, oh, all these food miles. Or it's almost like the bad calorie count is the kind of bad air mile count that some food has. But actually turning it into things that say, oh, you know, the chefs have handpicked this food from the gardens daily adds to my experience. It brings something additional.
Yeah, that's very true. And I guess any other important things to do with sort of human psychology and travel behavior, what are sort of the key messages for people out there?
Sure. So I think we've talked about this one, but don't assume education and science and facts are for everyone. So really think about, you can know a lot about something without necessarily loving it and wanting to care for it. So in terms of bringing people into science, bring in the arts, music, dance, photography. Tourists also think in moments. So capturing the stories and the importance of feelings when people are traveling, I think, is quite important. So the National Trust ran a campaign called Moments of Joy. And I worked for National Tourist Board before, and it was all about thinking why people travel. And it might not be to learn something. It might just be for fun or for food and drink or for an adventure. So bringing that moments into it too. And thinking about perspective. So one of the good examples I like to share is I saw a rehoming dog advert. And I think if we all think back, they used to show really sad dogs looking really sad and all lonely. But I recently saw an advert that said, are you stuck at your desk for 9 hours a day and need a walkies? And they've totally switched it around to focus on the person and what the person's going to get out from rehoming a dog rather than the dog. And I think just that change in perspective can be really quite powerful in marketing.
That's really interesting, actually, isn't it? And have you seen that translate into anything to do with the environment?
I think we can see that on the adverts, you know, for charities now on the TV. They always end with a positive message. They're much more positive than they used to be. And we're learning a lot now about shame and shock in research, and they are great tools to kind of capture people's attention. But what they must be followed up then with an action and where people feel able to help. So if you show a huge humanitarian crisis, you've got to be able to show that your donation is actually going to make something tangible and really make a difference. And I think, you know, the likes of Oxfam do a great job here by saying £5 will buy a blanket or £20 will buy a goat, or because it's really tangible and that enables people to really understand that their contribution can make a real difference.
Yeah, I think that's right. And if you just shame and shock without any, you know, reward, I think people are quite liable to just get emotional fatigue as well, just by this constant messaging, and then it can be really difficult at times.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes it's too much. You've had a long day and you have such a strikingly shocking image on the TV, you're going to switch it over rather than trying to help.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose a lot of your research is focusing sort of on nature and that side of things, understandably, given your interest. And I just wondered, do you have any advice for how we kind of talk about nature, particularly with clients if we're out on an expedition or things like that? Or
yeah, I love nature. So where to start? I think it's important to think we are part of nature. So not humans kind of versus nature, which sometimes I think storylines can go down that route. Again, making science more accessible to everyone. So using words like wildlife or wildlife you'll see in your garden versus big kind of words like biodiversity to make sure people understand. And thinking about senses, there's so many senses in nature. Just because you're not seeing endangered species when you're on a trip, perhaps you can hear one, perhaps you can smell one, perhaps you can, one has been here before. So, and that's almost as exciting in many ways as just seeing things. And nature is not a product. So ask people to donate because they love wildlife and they're not paying you for a service. So I think that's another kind of key thing to think in.
Yeah, that's very interesting because I guess as a society, we're increasingly sort of very transactional, you know, instant gratification. And I suppose it's getting people to sort of just readjust their mindset and maybe rewind to what it was a decade or so ago and sort of just reconsider their interactions. But I think the one with nature and not versus nature is a really valuable one, I think, actually, to kind of promote to people. And I suppose another interesting thing is how much this is really covered at a sort of population level, isn't it? Because a lot of it, you know, depends on how things are in schools and in other institutions. And I hope that with the, you know, the news articles, with the fact that the environment is changing, that awareness is helping. Has your research touched on anything to do with that at all?
Yeah, definitely. So there's a piece of work that I've just published in terms of looking at the Students and Ice alumni database, actually. So I went back to everyone who's travelled on that programme over the last 18 years that it's been going. And I interviewed and surveyed them to see what a difference that has made in their lives up to 18 years after their expedition. And so we looked at things like career choice. Was going on a trip as a teenager or a young person, did that influence you to take a different career path? And it's really encouraging. There's some really lovely quotes and pieces of work coming out of that to show that it does have this long-term impact. So absolutely, I'm very much for the more time children spend in nature. Yeah,
I think that's definitely true. That mirrors some of the things I've heard from people when I've worked with British Exploring, who take young people to sort of fantastic environments and things. And you'll have alumni who have been, because they've been around since the 1930s, or some of their alumni obviously have moved on. But some of them who went on a trip, say, back in the 80s are saying, you know, this was at that point I had that epiphany, that experience in that environment, and that has essentially set me on this path. And that's so valuable, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, and I can say that's true for donations too. And we talk about a lot of in the moment and getting people to donate whilst they're there. But equally, getting people to donate when they come home is important. And it's my research has found that it's the donations when people get home that they're the lasting ones. And I've got evidence in my research of people donating 20 and beyond years after their travel experience, as they've seen a mountain gorilla and they are absolutely determined to continue to support them, you know, throughout their life moving forward.
That's really, really valuable, isn't it? Yeah, and I think if we can harness some of that research and put it into our wider practice, that's fantastic. Well, it's been really good talking to you. Could talk for a lot longer about some of your projects. They're all really interesting, and I think it's been really good for people listening to sort of get a bit of an idea about, you know, some of the psychological aspects, because then when we are either doing personal travel or working on an expedition, it's about how we can then present things to clients or other participants, isn't it, and frame things differently, perhaps, to kind of help them see things from that point of view. So it's been really fascinating. Thanks a lot for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
If you've enjoyed listening to our podcast, then check out our website, www.thewildernessmedic.com. If you're interested in being a guest on a future episode or writing a blog for us, then do get in touch and don't forget to follow us on social media. Until next time, take care.